Hey everyone. Hey Robbie, are we up
and we're going? Live.
We're live. We're hot.
We are live.
We're rocking it. Thanks everyone for joining us. If you're watching us live, we appreciate you. If you're streaming later, we appreciate you as well. And because this show is about communism, we appreciate you with exact equality, no matter who you are and where you come from. Thanks seriously for joining us. This is a Rumble Premium edition of this, I don't know, not even a show. It's just like, it's my
two friends talking
on my Rumble feed. So it's only here. So Robbie is, of course, the producer for, God, 5 million shows, including but not limited to Deprogram with myself and John Kiriakou, the TMI show with myself and Manila Chan, DMZ America, the podcast with myself and Scott Stantis. And who else are you doing, Robbie?
Oh, gosh. I'm doing Susie out of Cyprus. She's a mutual friend of mine and John's. Let's see. We're doing the TMI show, and we're doing all kinds of – I don't even know at this point. I'm doing everything. Sometimes I do DMZ. Sometimes I don't. It just depends on what's going on. It's a lot.
Well – that's a segue, because we're here to talk about and disagree about communism, my favorite economic ideology. As you and I have talked about in other contexts, I'm a Marxist. Obviously, I'm aware of the mistakes that socialists and communists have made, many of them, and we can talk about those at length. But fundamentally, I believe I can't get past the fact that really, all human beings are created equal, and that whether you believe in a creator or not, I do believe that that's an inherent part of the human condition, that we should treat each other all equally, and that people are all entitled to the good things in life. And as long as they are to be shared, they are to be shared. Something that even little kids learn at an early age is that, you know, sharing is good. Sharing is important. So anyway, this was your suggestion, Robbie, that we should talk about communism. So I'll let you start out. Oh, by the way, if you are watching live on Rumble, please feel free to pipe in with your comments. And Robbie, I guess you'll see them. I'm going to see if I can find them, and then I can like also just sort of respond in a more organic way.
Yeah, I've got the Rumble chat pulled up. So if anybody pops in, we'll be able to.
Yeah, I see it. I have it too. So yeah. So good. So Robbie, what did you have in mind when you wanted to talk about this?
Well, I mean, I've read your book, What's Left, and I got to say it was a great book. I'm actually rereading it again for the third time. It's a good book, and you've changed my mind on a lot of things. I'm a right winger. I'm a conservative. I'm a fundamentalist Christian, but like you, I believe in human rights. I think where we disagree is where do those rights come from? You know, where do they originate from? I believe that we are created in the image of God. And because we are created in his image, then he is the one that gives us natural rights, that he's the one that gives us the value that we have as human beings. Whereas it seems if I'm wrong on this, correct me. But it seems like that you think that the argument that you make is that the government is the originator of the rights, whereas I believe they are bestowed by our creator.
You know, I don't think that we're really that far from this. No, the government Marxism and communism, there's going to be a government at the beginning of this whole process. But government, it doesn't start with the government. You believe that these are rights that are inalienable, that come from God.
The natural law, natural rights, basically, well, is how I see it.
So I don't believe in God, but I agree that they're natural rights. I think they're inherent to being a human being. I think that just because we're human beings, we have natural rights. So I don't think there's any real, disagreement. I mean, it's not a meaningful disagreement, at least economically or philosophically, to say that, like, in our bones, we feel, whether we feel like it came from, a God, a higher power, or just because it's something that we just feel inside.
Yep.
We all, you know, there's no reason it's not fair for some people to have more than they can possibly use and for other people to not have enough to get by. And that's, and so, you know, you start with that. You have to, you know, you have to go back to the condition. Basically, I think Marxism in the modern era comes out of the Industrial Revolution. It comes out of this, you know, thing that started about 300 years ago in Great Britain and factory work, which was pretty fucking miserable. And then the French Revolution is really kind of the first idea that, like, you know, we have liberty, equality, and fraternity, right? We're all in the, this is a Western ideal that we're all, you know, whatever our differences are culturally, religion, education, interests, you know, ethnic group, whatever, none of those things really are that important. What matters is that we're all human beings. And then you get into into the American Revolution, which is not really a true revolution in that same sense, because that's really an independent struggle against Great Britain. And it kind of set us back. And I think it's part of the reason that the United States is a country that, you know, has had a hard time being fertile territory for the left. But Europeans kind of understand this. And
I can see that. But now here's my question, because I see this a lot. And this is a question that really haven't been able to get an answer from anyone. Mm. What's the difference from the communist view between equality and equity? Because those are two different things. And so how do you define those things?
Well, so I want to answer that. First of all, I want to also say that, under traditional Marxism, you start with socialism and then you build communism over time. But basically no one sane has ever believed that, that we've ever had a communist society. Pol Pot tried to do it in Kampuchea, and he was a maniac and it didn't work out well. I think it's more useful to say under socialism. So I'm sorry, Robbie, what was your question again?
Well, I mean, no, what is the difference from in the communist worldview between equality and equity?
Okay, so first of all, I never heard of, and I don't think any other like communist ever heard of equity until like 10 years ago. Okay, so basically equity doesn't exist. Equity is a meaningless term. Equality, we all understand what equality is, right? Now we can argue about, you know, how much equality we should have, but the point is we know what it is. I mean, equity as we understand it is sort of this, I think equity is bullshit. Equity is the idea that we don't live in a zero-sum game, that resources are not finite and not limited. Equity is the idea that, like, if I'm up here and I'm doing really well, you can come up to my same level and be doing as well as me without me having to come down at all. I don't believe in that. I think that, like, if you're poor and I'm rich, every dime that you get that I don't have, because it's redistribution of wealth, is going to get to equality, it's going to have to look more like that. Equity is the idea. It's a lie. It's a capitalist idea that, like, no one has to give anything up. And it's like, isn't that beautiful? It's also not really an economic idea because it has economic consequences and implications, but it's not first and foremost about class. It's first and foremost about advantaging or creating equity for groups like ethnic groups and women and other historically disadvantaged groups, and trying to give them an advantage and to make up for a systemic discrimination that they've suffered over eons. It's not about class first and foremost. I think equity is crap.
Gotcha. So what you're saying is that DEI then is not a communist ideal, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Absolutely not. Because the thing is, I think to have, first of all, everything comes around class for communists, everything. So the way we look at, obviously you can see, for example, in the United States that Black Americans earn on average and in the median less than, say, white Americans, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a disadvantage. Racism has a clear economic impact on Black people, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest reasons why I oppose immigration as much as I do, because it hurts Black Americans more than any other group.
Right. So, but a communist would look at the problem of racism and say, okay, if we concentrate on racism to the exclusion of class, then we're missing the point, because if we fix the class problem, then the racism kind of goes away in and of itself. And that might sound naive, but think about this. I mean, Asians were incredibly disadvantaged minorities in the United States in the 19th century, right? There's the Asian Exclusion Act. They were coolies. They were basically slave laborers for the railroads out west. And consequently, they were very poor. Now, that's not the case anymore, right? Asian Americans are, by some measures, do better than white Americans, right?
Oh, they're the most powerful ethnic group in the country from just terms of economic wealth.
Right. So economics has been destiny for Asians, right? I mean, there can be an Asian president. There can be, an Asian doesn't have to worry about cops very much the way a black person does, right? I mean, the reason Black people have to worry about cops is because of their economic status. Shitty economic status, they wouldn't suffer systemic discrimination the way that, and racism. Racism would just go away.
Okay, let me push back just a little bit here, because as a guy who grew up in the Deep South, I know a little bit about this. Is the poverty because Black society on whole is incredibly violent and have a lot of crime? Or is the crime and the violence the result of economics? I argue it's the other way around. It's a cultural issue first and foremost. Let me unpack this for you. Mm-hmm. And this is where one of the things that communism for me kind of comes up short with. Mm-hmm. Slavery and Jim Crow were not able to destroy the Black family. The welfare state under Lyndon Baines Johnson did. And that's where you start seeing the spiraling of Black society. You see the destruction of the Black family. You see the out of wedlock birth rate just explode. You have a complete collapse in the Black family, and as a result, you have all of these men running around with no daddy figures, no discipline, and 30% of the population commits more than half of the violent crime. I mean, that's not a class issue. That is a culture issue, in my opinion.
I think this is a snake eating its tail, because, Black people, their experience in the United States goes back to 1620. Yeah. And basically it's defined from the very beginning by objectification, violence, discrimination, racism, a kind of a Holocaust, in the transport and splitting of families and all that. So, you have a deeply traumatized population of people who are who basically have incredibly hard time. Their families were literally torn apart by slave owners and separated from the very beginning. So
that was 100 years in the past. Now, 1865 and 1963 are a long way away from each other, right?
Sure, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you take a population, you subject them to trauma, you subject them to poverty and economic discrimination, they're going to have dysfunction, and then that dysfunction comes around and can be used to justify further discrimination.
I mean,
like Primo Levi wrote about, in Survival at Auschwitz, a highly recommended book. He talked about, as an inmate at Auschwitz, that one of the great accomplishments of the Nazis was to reduce the inmates who were cultured, civilized, urban and urbane Jews from places like Berlin and Prague and Rome, basically to the status of animals. And then the German guards sat around and said, look at these people. They're animals. They deserve what they got. And we're treating them accordingly. That's exactly kind of like the way white racists look at Black people. They say, look at these fucking people. They live in slums. They're killing each other. They're shooting each other.
So then explain the Asians then, because as you rightly said, they got the shit into the stick too after the war of Northern Aggression. I mean, they were discriminated up until FDR put them in concentration camps. So, so why do you have the black population just destroying itself, whereas you have the Asian population that's excelling at every point? And well, how does communism they answer those two questions? Because they're both minorities, they're both are victimized, but one is destroying itself, and the other one is just kind of just taking over the entire country economically.
Well, I mean, of course, the population, you know, blacks are basically have been here in the United States since the very beginning of white colonization and settlement, right? The Asian experience in the United States, you know, in any significant number is far more recent. And their family structure was much stronger, you know, starting from the very beginning. And you didn't have them sold at auction separately, where children and mothers and fathers were literally torn apart and separated. They were together. And also culturally, when Asians came over, they kind of like learned to help each other out, right? They had like sort of in the same way that Italians formed the mafia to help each other out. The Irish formed, you know, Tammany Hall and other organizations to help each other out as immigrants. So new arrivals were greeted, they were given loans, sometimes they were exploited, but the point is that they had ethnic solidarity on their side, right? So if you were a new Chinese immigrant, even today, you land in a Chinatown in Washington or Boston or New York or San Francisco, you know, you'll be poor, you'll be working hard, but there will be older, there's a good chance that you have relatives, or if not relatives, ethnic fellows, friends who are going to help you out and say, oh, you want to start a little restaurant? You know, hey, I'll lend you the money. Black people didn't have access to capital. They didn't have access to those family structures. I mean, their experience, even though they were both, you know, discriminated against and brutalized, slavery was a lot worse and it was a lot longer. And they didn't have the cultural fallbacks that Asians had. I think for Asians, their ace in the hole has been their family structure. And you allude to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, before Johnson's war on poverty, the black marriage rate was higher than the white marriage rate. That's a statistical fact. So I don't really understand, you know, how this works. And before people in the chat just start, you know, going off calling me a racist and a white nationalist, for people who don't know, my wife is black. We have two kids. Ted's been here. He's met my family.
Yep.
And my wife, she's actually been attacked by other black people and made fun of and called an Oreo and everything else for acting white. And
now so that, in my view, that's a form of dysfunction,
100%.
Right? Like, and obviously that's not like a dysfunction is not unique to blacks. I mean, white dysfunction, you know, in the Rust Belt where I grew up is everywhere, right? Like, who are you to think that you're better? Who are you to think that you want to, you know, better yourself and make money or, you know, start a business or become an artist or get a good job or speak properly? Who the fuck are you?
I have eight brothers and sisters. Most of them just think that I'm just some kind of a transplant or you know, whatever the hell else. I mean, they're all just a bunch of, cracker, you know, meth heads back home. And I left Montana just, you know, to get married and have a life and start over. So I get it. But I guess that the question that I have, and then to kind of bring this back into communism, how does communism address this whole idea of victim culture and cultural self-destruction?
Communism has no, it says to each according to his need, to each according to his ability, right? So basically it expects, communism doesn't allow for laziness or indolence or drug addiction or living, you know, a dissolute Hunter Biden like lifestyle. It's expected that you're supposed to contribute as much as you possibly can, as well as you possibly can, to the community. It's not expected necessarily that, like, a person who, let's say, has no arms and legs do the same kind of work as someone who's able-bodied, but it's expected that they will do everything they possibly can to contribute to society. And society is supposed to, so we're all in it together.
Yeah.
We all take care of each other. And then.
Yeah, well, we are. And that's one of the places where you and me agree. Like, I think that instead of funding NATO and having all these stupid, you know, foreign wars, mm-hmm. we should be taking care of the American people first. There, as long as there's a single American living under a bridge, we should not be sending a single penny to fighting foreign wars for Israel or any other country, and Europe can take care of its fucking self.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Now, sort of in a broader internationalist sense, communism has problems with the nation state, but, you know, we have to be realistic. We live in the nation state system for the foreseeable future. So
yeah, it's not going away.
It's not. Well, I mean, maybe someday, but I don't know how that happens. I don't know how that looks, and we're not there yet, and I don't see it anytime soon. Right. So within the construct of the nation state, you have to sort of live with nationalism and communism side by side. That's an adjustment that communism had to make throughout the 20th century. There was something called the Comintern, the Communist International out of Moscow, that sought to sort of govern all the communist parties around the world. And the idea was one day we'll have one world communist government. They gave up on that because that obviously wasn't going to happen. And also there was a thought, for example, that Ho Chi Minh, who was a Vietnamese nationalist, or Fidel Castro, who was a Cuban nationalist, wasn't compatible with being a communist or a socialist. And of course, obviously, the two things are, Mao Zedong was a Chinese nationalist, even though, he
was a monster.
But sure. The point is, all right, but we're.
I would not lift him up as a shining example of communism.
Socialism, right? But I mean, Mao Zedong's contribution is more complicated than, he liked to do. He had gross sexual thoughts, and he obviously presided over mass famine and so on. We can get into all that, but we're talking about the theory of communism here.
Yeah, but my question is, how would communism solve the dysfunction in Black America? What is communism's answer for restoring the family unit? What's communism's answer for you get married and you have kids and daddy stays at home and he raises children because the government sucks at being a dad? What is communism's answer for that?
Well, obviously the thing is, let's say you had a communist revolution today here in the United States. The new communist, communist states of America would have a lot of fucking work to do, right? So it's not going to be like overnight. We're going to fix everything. First of all, you're going to slowly build socialism, but before you can even do that, you're going to have to address these very issues that you're talking about. So you're going to have to say to people who are not working and who are gangbangers and who are dysfunctional, you're going to have to be like, guys, those days are over. Like, we're going to give you everything, but we are going to expect everything too. Like, you're going to be living as well as everybody else, but you're not allowed to, sell drugs in the community, and you're not allowed to, beat people up, who don't pay you protection money. That kind of behavior is not allowed. Irresponsible behavior, like, knocking women up and, not sticking around. That's not going to be tolerated.
What's the penalty?
Well, it has to be worked. It's politics. I mean, socialism is not a dictatorial system. It's democratic, small d democratic. So people have to get together and on the local, state, and national level decide what are the sanctions, what are appropriate penalties, reforms. I mean, you really don't want to just punish people unless it's a last resort, right? You want to show them the better way to live. You want them to show them, like, listen, you have an opportunity. Under capitalism, you were disposed of. No one gave a shit about you. Like, now you have an opportunity to be something and someone better. That's a lot of work for a new government. But sure, they would have to address these issues.
But there are some people, though, in this world who are self-destructive. And this is one of the ways I'm probably actually to the left of you, which is kind of saying something. I fully endorse the Chinese model. If someone's addicted to drugs, that person gets the rehab that they need. No questions asked. But if you're caught dealing drugs, I put a bullet in your head because you're selling poison. You don't have the right to destroy the society as a whole, because at that point you are a net drain on the population as a whole. So in my mind, that is a very communist idea that I can get behind, small c, not big c.
Well, you'll note, I mean, obviously, as you're well aware, I know because we've talked about it before, China and Russia, neither of whom are communist or even socialist countries, nevertheless, are, you know, China has a, you know, they're a capitalist society with a lot of communist slogans hanging from banners on the wall, but they're a capitalist country. These two countries have a history of communism, and they have a zero tolerance policy towards drugs. They don't tolerate it, right? I mean, at all. Ask Brittany Griner.
Yeah, and we shouldn't. And one thing, Ted, now, this is your maiden show here. Now it's your Rumble partner, and you have got your very first ad. Do you want me to read it for you, or do you want me to post it for you to read?
Why don't you go ahead and read it?
You got this. Is your y'all? This is huge. This is Ted's very first ad from Rumble as a Rumble content creator.
Ironically, considering the topic,
very much so. You've probably noticed Rumble is growing fast. It's not slowing down. They're building a real alternative to big tech that puts creators first and actually protects free speech. And now there's Rumble Premium, an easy way to upgrade your experience. With Premium, you get ad-free viewing across the platform. No pre-roll, no interruptions, just the content you came for. Plus, Rumble Premium members unlock exclusive content like bonus videos, behind-the-scenes drops, and more from your favorite creators. Right now, Rumble is offering $10 off an annual subscription. Just go to rumble.com/premium and use the code, the promo code studio at checkout. That's rumble.com/premium, promo code studio. No ads, more freedom, and the content you actually care about, that's the deal. Ted, congratulations. That is freaking huge.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
You did it. You got there.
I know. And in relatively short time, thanks to you, Robbie. I mean, you put all this together. So thank you so much for doing that. Let's keep going. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, kind of going along with with this thread here, I can justify my position about executing drug dealers and murderers and rapists. Because from a biblical standpoint, from the biblical commandments, murder was punishable by death because you're killing someone made in the image of God. And the way that I see this, if you're selling drugs, you are selling poison, and that is the direct result of what you're doing. You are taking a life for profit, and you are a social pathogen. And as a result, just like a slave trader, or someone that just would go and put poison in a bunch of food at a grocery store, selling drugs is the exact same thing. There's no middle room there. From a communist perspective, how then would you argue that the state has that authority to take that life?
Well, I mean, I'm personally opposed to the death penalty. I think, you know...
What about pedophiles? Like if someone rapes and kills a little kid?
I think that person should go to prison for the, you know, and be separated from society in order to keep society safe.
I think that person should be separated from the planet and his mortal coil.
I mean, certainly, look, communist societies have had the death penalty. I mean, this is just absolutely my personal opinion. There's nothing incompatible between communism and the death penalty. That is an issue for a given society to work out. And, you know, culture enters into this too, right? I mean, a communist society is going to differ depending on where it is, when it is, you know, who it is. And for some societies, death penalty is going to be right. For other societies, it's not going to feel right. And I think, you know, for me personally, and I'm not the king of communism, you know, I'm against it because I think it's basically... the state should set the highest possible standard of behavior for human beings. The state should be, you know, we should look at the agents of the state, the, you know, public officials, public servants, and say, oh my God, like those are the best behaved, least, most incorruptible people who I aspire to behave like. And that can't be true if the state is murdering people. Murder is the worst thing that you can do in almost every single society in the world. And so when the state is killing people, something that, you know, obviously it's a failure of society when we say, well, there's nothing we can do about this person because they're this, that, or the other, or they did this, that, or the other. This person's irredeemable. We wash our hands of them. Fuck them. I mean, that goes contrary to like what communism is about, which is to say that everyone is important and everyone matters.
Then how do you square the fact that the most murderous countries on the in human history have been communist nations, like the Soviet Union, famous for its purges, Mao Zedong, after the horrors of World War II, decided to one up it and kill 60 million of his own people? So, hard needle to kind of thread there, isn't it?
Well, first of all, Mao Zedong didn't set out to kill 60 million of his own people.
But he did. That's the point that I'm making. But he did. Adolf Hitler didn't set out to destroy his own country, but he did. I mean, that's the end result.
Adolf Hitler did set out to kill. I mean, Nazi Germany did kill close to 100 million people. And
yeah, but not their
own
people.
They did that on purpose just for fun.
But Mao Zedong killed 60 million of his own people. Because he's a moron.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so intent does matter, wouldn't you say?
Well, maybe after you kill the first million, maybe you can take a little bit of a step back. Maybe this isn't working out quite so well. Once you get up to the 5 million mark, maybe at that point, maybe you call your advisors together. Say, this isn't really working out. Instead, they're just going to double down. And I think that just comes down to where if people are chattel, if they exist for the purpose of the state, like how they do in communism, that's the argument that you're making.
Well,
if they're just a bunch of useless eaters, then fuck them. You don't need them.
Well, I mean, look, let's talk about Mao Zedong, right? Yeah. Like what went wrong here?
Mao Zedong went wrong.
Well, the biggest problem with Mao Zedong is that he never should have been the head of a government, right? He was no good at it, to say the least. He was a good revolutionary organizer. He was a good intellectual vanguard guy. He was even a pretty decent tactician and a good poet. But the guy could not fucking run a nation state. And he was shitty at it. From the very, very beginning, he didn't really know what he was doing. And it was a fucking catastrophe. I would argue the same thing about Joseph Stalin. Joseph Stalin was completely incapable of doing the job that he had. He shouldn't have done it. But that doesn't change, the fundamentals of what these people like Lenin and Mao Zedong before he took power attempted to accomplish, which was to say, listen, we're gonna start from scratch. And frankly, China was and Russia were both heavy lifts because these were agrarian societies that were trying to build communism, without going into through the usual, post-industrial reorganization that, was anticipated by Marxist theorists in Western Europe in the mid 1800s. So Chinese communism, on the left, we call that really existing socialism as opposed to, theoretical. I mean, basically, look, there's never really been a true socialist economy or a socialist society. There's been societies with vestiges or aspects of socialism, including the United States. But, there's never been an actual socialist country.
Yeah, but I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that the models that you have to lift up of societies that have tried to do this, arguably the most successful one is probably Vietnam. Cambodia was a disaster.
Cambodia was a disaster.
China is not a communist country because they had the brains to realize that it didn't work. They stepped away. Now they have that. Then they have this hybrid system. The Soviet Union disintegrated. Cuba is whatever the hell it is. It's a basket case.
Cuba had a nice run.
Yeah, it did.
And by the way, I want to say that Nazi Germany, which is a far right, ideology, I think gets the record as the biggest butchers of human history.
I don't know, man, because if you go through and if you add up the totals, I realize that they're two different countries, but they had the same system. If you add up the Soviet Union and China, they make the Germans did look mighty pretty freaking small by comparison. I think that's a fair argument to make, I think.
100 million people. I don't know.
Yeah, well, how many Russians did Stalin kill?
It's hard to say, right? I mean, between...
And then how many Chinese did Mao kill?
Yeah, again, it's hard to say, right? Tens of millions.
I rest my case.
So you don't get to hundreds of millions, though. Yeah. Anyway,
I mean, which end of the turd do you want to hold? I mean, I'd rather just leave it in the punch bowl, personally.
But here's a question for you, Robbie. How many people has capitalism killed? Right,
millions.
I would argue that almost everybody who dies in the United States today is killed from capitalism. I mean, it's like, you know, capitalism kills people because they don't get proper health care. They're overworked. They're stressed out. They have fucking heart attacks. They have strokes. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody who has a heart attack or a stroke, that's capitalism that's killing them. It makes me laugh. Avoid stress, your doctor tells you. Really? I never thought of that. Can I avoid capitalism? Because capitalism is putting me under stress. Literally, before we went on here, I'm like doing my taxes. I'm like, I'm stressed. Okay. It's like, I shouldn't have to do that. In a socialist society, probably wouldn't have to do taxes. You would just be paid what you're paid, and that's it.
I don't know why you just have national sales tax and be done with it. I don't understand the whole idea of stealing wealth.
Because it's regressive.
Who cares?
People care. I mean, regressive taxes are not good for society because rich people aren't paying anything close to their fair share.
They're not paying now. So what's your point?
Well, they'd be paying even less under a flat tax or under a sales tax. A sales tax is essentially a flat tax. I mean, the problem with...
But everyone buys something. So if I go and if I buy a Lamborghini...
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Yeah. So let's say I make $10,000 a year and I buy a $20,000 car and you make $200,000 a year and you go buy the same car, right? Well, that car costs you... It costs me 2 years' pay. For you, it costs you a small fraction of 1 year's pay. And so if you're taxed on it, the same percentage that I'm taxed on it, well, I'm paying a lot more of my income than you are in taxes.
I get what you're saying, but rich people also, though, spend a lot more than what I spend. Like, for example, I make a lot less now than I did at the hospital. That's just honest. That's factual. But I'm also happier doing the work that I'm doing right now because I'm doing the work that I enjoy doing and I'm still able to pay my bills. So it's a net win. And we got ourselves an active chat here going on too, Ted. I'm sticking over here on your chat. This is nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I was not expecting this.
And of course, I should point out that the evil one is observing all.
Clovis?
Yes.
Hi, Clovis. He's like, I got you
he's
all.
Looking, he's looking at me like I've
got you. That's what we need. We need Cat Cam. We do. We need to just have Clovis Cam all day. Just stream Clovis.
Yeah, true. I think it would probably be our most successful show by far.
But to answer your question about capitalism, I submit to you that the first truly capitalist war fought in history was the War of Northern Aggression, or otherwise called the American Civil War. That was a capitalist war.
All wars are capitalist.
But this one specifically, and here's where I'm going with that. So you have the agrarian slaveholding South that wanted to import cheaper manufactured goods from the British Empire because it was cheaper. Mm-hmm. You had the industrialized North, which, by the way, had 4 slave states and child labor legalized with kids living at factories, getting maimed and killed every single year, that went to war with the South when the Southern states nullified the taxes or the tariffs for imported British goods. Mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln, I submit, was a communist. We actually know that he wrote letters of a correspondence with Karl Marx. I think that if he had lived, he would have founded the American Communist Party. I've got no doubt in my mind.
So sad that he was killed.
I'm glad he was. He should have been killed years earlier. But the point that I'm making, though, to answer your question, here in the United States at the outset killed at the minimum 600,000 people. And the death toll has been going up since then. The difference is, though, is that how those people were victimized and how they were killed, whether it's building corporations going through and using coolies from China as opposed to slaves because the black population was just wrecked. And there's such a stigma, and especially in the North, because this isn't really popular. A lot of Northerners blamed black people for the war to begin with. So they didn't want to have black people there working on the railroads. So that's one of the reasons why they imported the Chinese, because of the stigma. They're worried about Northerners lynching the black people. figure that one out. But the difference is, though, is that capitalism kills slower, whereas communism kills much faster on a much higher scale, much faster.
I don't know if it kills slower, but maybe. But certainly it kills just as much. And I think it kills in a way that looks like natural causes. Right? Human beings die. Human beings get sick. But if it's Upton Sinclair of the jungle, of course it's not a surprise. We all know the studies. People who live in poor areas tend to live in places that suffer more ecological contamination, right? New York City has the cleanest, best drinking water in the United States, according to most studies, of any major city, right? The water's brought in from upstate New York, from the Catskills, and it's beautiful. It tastes great. Why? Because New York City is full of rich people. They demand good water. Los Angeles, the water's pretty good too. People are pretty rich. But you open the tap in Western Pennsylvania where it's Po and a flame shoots out. Or Flint, Michigan, you have Obama pretending to take a glass of that water. It's just as real, right? World War II, that's the good war. That's the one that we're all supposed to be proud of. But,
Avoidable.
I'm glad that the camps got liberated. I'm glad that my ancestral home of France got liberated. But the fact is, that was just a happy accident. The Allies didn't care about that shit. They were there to open. They were pissed off that Nazi Germany had completely locked down the entire Western and Central European market, and they were like, "Oh fuck, we want to open that up for ourselves." That was about opening up Western Europe to American manufacturing goods.
Oh, 100%. And also, don't forget the Bretton Woods Agreement destroyed the British Empire. That was the goal, was the dismantling of the British Empire. And it succeeded. That was the goal. Do you want to answer some questions? We got a bunch of them piling up here.
Let's do it.
All right. So Cobra 180 says, do you guys have an opinion on cognitive liberty, i.e. decriminalizing drug use, legalization backed by education, medical framework seems better for society than empowering crime through prohibition?
I'm sensitive to the argument that prohibition causes crime because history proves it to be true. On the other hand, I guess that this is one of those things where I don't feel strongly about it. I feel like smarter people than me should study and figure out what's the best way forward. I'm generally kind of not into mind-altering substances, although I like a glass of wine, as you know. So that said, I can also see the incredible evil that, I like to drink. But, objectively, I'd probably have to vote for prohibition if it came up on a ballot because alcohol kills people on the roadways. It causes liver disease. It causes domestic violence. It causes all sorts of problems. So, but on the other hand, I kind of feel like people should have. I have a libertarian streak that says people, want to fuck around with their bodies. They should be able to as long as they're not harming anyone else. It's tough. I don't think there's a simple. This is one way or the other. I don't know. What do you think, Robbie?
Here's how to push back on that. If you have universal health care where every taxpaying citizen in the country is responsible for taking care of your doctor's bill, you don't have the right to destroy yourself. Because at that point, you're then taking away resources from somebody who's sick because they're not self-destructive. That's how I see it. I don't think that we as a society,
where do you go from there? Do we become a nanny state under socialism where it's like, oh my God, Robbie eats burgers and, burgers will give him our arterial sclerosis and then we'll all have to pay for him. Or, oh my God, Ted doesn't exercise enough. Ted exercises too much. He's going to fuck up his bones. And then we're going to have to treat him. At a certain point, we can't bubble wrap the entire population.
No, you don't. But you could damn sure go after people who cause harm to the population writ large. If you're a meth dealer, I want to bring this up. My sister, Molly, she was a drug addict, and she got murdered when I was a teenager because she couldn't pay her dealer. So he cut her throat. Drugs are a poison. There's nothing good that you get out of meth. There's nothing good that you get out of cocaine. There's nothing good that you get off of selling LSD or acid or anything like that. You are screwing with someone's their mind. You're screwing with their body, and you are impacting society at large. San Francisco looks like the Walking Dead because of drugs. That is a statement of fact.
Look, I agree with you.
And so society does not have a right to or a responsibility to commit suicide because you think you have the right to be an idiot and to poison yourself. That's why I say I have zero problem with
it. About like the, you know, the whole like, okay, so again, you know, the thing is,
I'm more communist than you are on this topic.
Well,
which
there
is
are
ironic.
There are some rules. I mean, the thing is, look, that's what politics is. Politics is this kind of discussion where people get together and hash it out and try to come out with some kind of 50-yard line as to where society is on any given day, about how we feel about it. And that's going to change over time, right? I mean, when I was a kid, you could smoke in the maternity ward. It's like, now you can't smoke in the office, right? I personally hate smoking. I can't stand it. I can't stand being around it. I always hated it. Couldn't be happier. But, you know, societal norms change. People argue. And, you know, I don't have any problem with that. It's like, and, you know, personally, I hate drugs. So, but on the other hand, you know, I do worry. I mean, look at what the state does when it goes to war against drugs. You know, it sweeps up a lot of innocent people, wastes a lot of lives.
Sure.
It becomes its own like imprisonment industrial complex.
Well, it's because they're punishing the people who are victims of drug abuse when the people selling the poison get a slap on the wrist and get let go. That's why Robbie's system is superior. I would crucify them on the side of the interstate with a big sign. Like, honest to God, like go full on Jesus style. If you do this, this is the price that you're going to pay. This is not allowed.
yours will be a harsh communism. Cobra says it's a mixed bag. If there was a legal market, it would eliminate the illicit market. Also, liberty and personal responsibility versus risks and benefits to society. Although, I don't know, it's hard to say that's not always true. Like right now we have legal cannabis sales in cities like New York, and yet the illicit market continues to go strong. There's the legal cannabis places manufacture too much, and so then they dump the excess onto the gray market, the black market, and it's cheaper than what you can get at the dispensary. I would say that the quality level clearly of cannabis has improved dramatically in terms of cleanliness and potency since the 1980s when, you know, I started first hanging out with people who did drugs. On the other hand, the high potency has all sorts of negative ramifications too, right? Like driving while stoned is now a big problem where it never used to be. So
I submit to you, one of the reasons why we haven't had a revolution in this country yet, either left or right, is because the society at writ large is so stoned that we can't marshal the testicular fortitude, much less the cognitive ability to stand up and realize, hey, we're all getting screwed here. There's a reason why here in Montana, there's a cannabis shop on every single corner. They want the population stoned.
They blundered into it, though, right? I mean, 20 years ago, that wasn't true.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And that's what I'm saying. On this issue, it's pretty wild. I'm to your left, which is kind of wild. Well, so anyone who knows me knows that I'm typically not well known for being a left winger.
Well, how are you saying you're on my left?
By saying that I would support the authority of the state through, the utmost penalty of doing this.
Well, by the way, I think
because the right's all about personal liberty and personal responsibility.
I think you're conflating communism with statism. And look, a powerful
it's one and the same.
No, not at all. That's not
sure true. It is. Okay, explain to me, honest to God, what's the differences between statism and communism in the context of the Soviet Union? The Communist Party was the state.
So the Soviet Union wasn't really a socialist society, right? It was an authoritarian state. that had the window trappings of socialism.
They had the Hamelin sticker, and their whole thing was advanced to the flag of communism across the entire globe.
Democracy too, and as you always say, we're not, right? So, I mean, they were a lot. They said they were a lot of things that they were not. They had an elite who had, like, you know, luxurious homes, and while other people lived in squalid apartments. The Soviet Union is an authoritarian regime. So is communist China. It's not a socialist state. And statism, look, you had an incredibly powerful state under Nazism, under Ceausescu in Romania, all sorts of right wing regimes. Pinochet had a powerful state. He was a right winger. You can have a powerful state under the right. You can have a weak state under the left. Those are two different things. It's like socialism does not inherently require a powerful state. In fact, I would argue that if you have a society that's healthy, whether it's a left wing, right wing, or somewhere in between, you don't really need that a very big, powerful state, because it tends to govern itself. People tend to agree basically about most things, and they self-regulate for the most part.
But that's why religious states tend to have lower crime, because if you believe that there's a higher power that you have to answer to,
you all sign on to a similar set of belief systems about how things should be, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, back in the 1920s and 30s, back when the United States was, I guess you'd call a Christian nation, the crime rate was a lot less back then than it was after the 60s, when secularism really just kind of came in, because the social contract was, we are going to live under Christian belief, Christian law, Christian doctrine, and what's the highest tenet of Christianity? First, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, then love thy brother as thyself. First, do no harm. I mean, that's the basics of the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. Well, we kind of did away with all that in the 1960s, and now we have industrialized prisons. So,
right.
I mean, you can make the point.
By the way, we have a powerful state in the United States, right?
Far too powerful.
It's certainly not a socialist country.
I don't know. This country is a full on oligarchy.
And I think we're, it is an oligarchy. And now I think, you know, as I was, I don't know if you caught DMZ yesterday. It was a good discussion with Mr. Fish and Scott. But we're, you know, the United States really is now just now arriving at the early stages of fascism. And I think the war is the tipping point. Because you have, for traditional fascism, you really have to have militarism. Up until recently, I used to always say, Trump's best feature was that he was skeptical of military intervention. And, well, that's out the fucking window, right? Yeah. So,
now, and I just had to clarify something real quick for Ray here in the chat. Ray's asking, Ted, will you crucify stoners like Robbie?
Robbie's not a stoner.
No, I want to make this clear. I don't want to crucify or execute people who are victims of drug abuse. They're victims in every sense of the word, just as much as anybody else. The people who I want to put down are the people who are selling the poison. If you hurt a kid, if you're a pedophile, you get the 50-cent solution of a 9mm to the back of the head. If you sell poison to anyone, you get the same treatment. There is no point for you existing in a civilized society. If you allow that crap to happen, it's a social pathogen.
Well, and I mean, obviously, I agree that, like, if you're an addict or a user, you shouldn't be punished. I mean, you know, you need rehab or whatever.
You need help.
But I would go further and say that in most cases, when you're talking about the criminals or people who sell drugs, most of them are people who, you know, they don't have a lot of opportunities, right? It's the only way that they can make money. They don't have access to capital. This is the business that exists in the areas where they grow up. It's nobody's coming into town and saying, "Hey, why don't you start your own Broadway musical?" This is what's there.
The one I sell people.
Most this people is can be reformed. Almost everyone can be reformed. I really believe that.
You just made the argument for the slave trade. No, there's no other work there. So what do? You go catch people and you sell them. It's the same thing. You know, the economic model is either A, you sell poison, or B, you sell people. Africa
and sold them to the slave traders. I think that's probably true, right?
Oh, of course it's true. You know, so and the Islamic slave trade was a lot more brutal than the Western slave trade was.
The system, the problem is the system is corrupting and evil and vile. So, of course, get rid of the system. That's why I'm a commie. It's why I want to see a revolution, because I hate the fucking system and what it does to all of us. I mean, literally speaking for myself, I mean, I was a cute, naive little boy. And so were you, Robbie. Yep. And adulthood and growing up to be an adult in this fucking system forces us to walk down the street. And when someone asks us for money, to ignore them or to step over them when they're sleeping in front of us on the sidewalk and pretend like we don't see them. That's not normal. That's not human. It's not humane.
I agree.
The system is it makes us dirty. Okay. And that's what the system's doing to the people in the situations you described, who are selling drugs or who were selling slaves or whatever.
Yes, I mean, it's the same thing. And just here's a question for you in regards to communism. Hmm. Is charity really charity if the state reaches into your pocket at the point of a bayonet, takes your money, and then gives it to somebody else? Or does charity have to be a conscious act that you make? Well, charity is a thing.
Capitalist conceit. Charity is the idea that, like, I'm loaded, so I have a little extra, and just to be a nice guy, I should pay for your kid to have a book in school so she can learn how to read or whatever. That's charity. But socialism and communism don't believe in charity. The socialism and communism believes that everything that exists that is good, the air, the water, the food that we eat, the plants, the trees, everything is here, and that it's all equally ours, right? Where the whole planet is all equally ours. So under socialism, if we notice that like all the people who live in this community don't have good water and they live in shitty houses and they don't have good schools and everybody else does have good water, that we're like, okay, we're going to have to ask the people who are doing well to, make sure that people who aren't living well do live well.
But you're describing it.
That's not charity. That's just doing what's right.
But what you're describing is a pure fantasy. Like one of the big myths that we have, and you've heard this before, is the myth of the noble savage. Now, before the Europeans came here, the Americas were this garden where you have these noble savages and everyone lived in harmony. This kumbaya, all these Indians dancing around the campfires, when nothing was further from the truth. They were warring with each other, enslaving each other, and they worshiped nature, like what you're talking about. Who can own the wind? Who can own a tree? Who can own the land? That's why the Indians didn't have fences. They believe in them. Who can fence off what the Great Spirit gives you? But that would stop them from going across the river and wiping out an entire other village and enslaving their kids. So what you're describing has never, ever, ever happened in the entire story of human history.
That's when you get the power of the state, right? Where it's like where the state does have to sort of, you're not asking people to voluntarily do those things.
But
you're
then saying, who, we have a but society. Then who decides?
What you're saying is we had a revolution X number of years ago, and we decided we wanted to make it a priority to make sure that we all do well. And it's like,
You need a powerful state to make that happen.
You need a state that has a certain amount of power. Yes, that's right.
But the state need to have a monopoly on force to make that happen.
Well, probably, yeah.
So then if you object... No, once a state becomes corrupt, because all states become corrupt.
That's always going to be a struggle and always going to be a problem.
And that's why communism will never work.
Ray in the chat was saying, Seaman, the issue is really corruption in any system. And I'll say corruption is an issue in every system. But the difference is capitalism is a corrupt idea from the get-go. Capitalism, if exercised without quote-unquote corruption, if everything is done purely, literally begins with the idea that we are not all created equal, that we're not all entitled to good things in life. Nobody's entitled to anything. And that if you fucking starve to death and die because you just don't have good luck or you don't work hard or whatever, like, fuck you, you die. that's that is a corrupt idea. Okay, you don't need to corrupt it. It doesn't. It comes pre-corrupted. It's like socialism can absolutely be corrupted, and it has been every single time it's been attempted.
With feudalism.
Wait, let me just finish. So it starts, but socialism at least begins with the theory that like we're all equal, and then gets corrupted from there. And I would rather start from this beautiful, great human and humane ideal and try to avoid the corruption and the pitfalls of corruption than start with a festering, shitty, like pile of boil, pox infested shit that is capitalism. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're really making a case for feudalism.
Do you tell?
Well, because what you're talking about is, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm putting the words in your mouth, by all means, call me out on it.
I will.
What you want is a system where people agree that in principle we are all the same, like we're all tenant farmers, and then there'll be a hierarchy that we work on building to the point of having a more fair system. To me, that sounds really feudalistic
there's overlap. I mean, look, if you have a benevolent feudal lord,
then it's a big if.
And that's exactly the problem, right? Like monarchy or feudalism, those are great systems. If the lord is a benevolent, kind, non-greedy, generous person.
Sounds like communism. You're working great as long as you don't get stolen or mail.
Well, but so under socialism, we don't put as much trust into one person or even a small group of people. Under socialism, the people collectively are in charge of things.
But you have a state that has a monopoly on force and powerful and people who enjoy power typically are not the nicest people.
But you have to set up a system where there's some kind of mechanism that ensures that the people who serve in the state don't remain in power, and that there's constantly power is constantly dissolved and checked and counterbalanced. And look, I know you don't like Mao Zedong, but Mao Zedong had this idea, like Thomas Jefferson, that you had to have a revolution pretty often, because otherwise things are just going to get corrupt.
I think that
I'm sympathetic to that.
Would you consider Sparta probably the society that came closest to capitalism? Not capitalism, but communism? Because of the abolition of money?
I think it was a very small society, and obviously Sparta didn't have voting rights for, slaves and so on. But
Sparta didn't have slaves. They had helots.
There's lots of rights.
Yeah. But they didn't have slaves. Like you couldn't buy and sell.
Kind of like, they're like slaves, sort of.
Yeah, they're tenant farmers. Mm-hmm. But I mean, no, to your point, is that you had the ephors who were at the top, and this is what was really kind of cool. The ephors, they could veto even the kings, and Sparta had two kings, but at the end of their 1 year term, they were impeached. They had to go on trial at the end of their term every year.
There's a lot to be said for that.
Oh, for sure. I think that if the Chinese or the Soviets had done something similar to that, where they were able to hold the powerful people accountable in some way, then their societies wouldn't have turned into these steaming piles of crap that they became. But they didn't have that, because corrupt people enjoy power, and power draws corrupt people.
Right.
That's the problem. And that's why
Socialism, the idea is, I think, very easy to defend. I think that where things get tough is when you work on governance. And that's true in every system, right?
Well, not with Christianity.
Well, in a Christian, in a Christian theocracy. But then what's to prevent a Christian theocracy from discriminating against, non-Christians, or for that matter, the wrong kinds of Christians, or for that matter, like we know Christians can be corrupt. We've seen it.
Very much so.
Church.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. That's why, that's one of the reasons I don't think that I hold to the opinion the vast majority of Catholics are not Christians, because they reject wholeheartedly what the Bible teaches.
A lot of evangelicals are corrupt too.
For sure. Oh, Jerry God, yes. But the system of the judges, though, is really closest to what is it you're describing, where you don't have a centralized state. Instead, what you did is that you would have basically states or tribes or whatever, and then they would administer. And then what would happen is that the judges would go and make sure that the stuff is done properly. And then the book of Judges.
And I mean, you know,
oh, yeah, no, for sure.
There's no system, I think, that's impervious. No,
there's nothing that's perfect.
Beings are very corruptible.
No, but the point is, though, is that the war against corruption is never ending, and you're never going to be able to win, mm-hmm. but you can always fight it until you can't. And I think that's where we are right now.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to end it, because I think that's exactly right. I think that's the final analysis. That's a good last word.
Yeah. And people said pure anarchy, man, and Christian ethics. Or do you mean Christian ethics? Just nuke it to the ground. Burn it all.
That's probably where we will end up when human civilization collapses in 25 years, if the studies are right.
Ted, you're getting another ad.
Am I really?
You are.
Do you want to put it up and I'll read that one?
Sure.
I wonder why that's happening. That's very strange.
Well, it's because you're a Rumble partner now. It is official. Sir, you are.
All right, let's have that.
Rumble is now building. Hey, I'm getting a phone call. It's my wife. Let me send her the voicemail. I'll send her a voicemail.
Ray's asking, did I ever see DRI, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles? Yes, I did. And I have a poster for them somewhere. I'm going to go ahead and start reading the ad. It's a familiar one. Still haven't tried 1775 coffee? Now's your shot. The 1775 starter kit just dropped, only 1,000 units. You're getting the bold dark roast that hits hard, the smooth medium roast, and the vitality mushroom coffee for clean energy and laser focus, no crash. All single origin, small batch, toxin-free, and mold-free. Plus, you're also getting a gold spoon clip because freedom is not scooped with plastic, a frother strong enough to stir up your coffee and your mother-in-law's opinions, and a black 1775 tumbler. That's $170 worth of coffee and gear. Yours for $99. It would be free under socialism, but that's not our society. This is for the ones who've been watching 1775 blow up on Rumble, wondering if it's actually worth it. Spoiler, it is. Go to 1775coffee.com/studio and grab your starter kit before they're gone. Bold beans, clean fuel, and a morning routine that stands for something just like Rumble does.
No, and Ted, what Ray gave you is not just a comment. He made your very first donation, your very first Rumble rant.
Thank you very much, Ray, for that. And
did you see DRI? I don't know what DRI is, but
Dirty Rotten Imbeciles.
Oh,
they're a hardcore band.
Gotcha.
They're still around, apparently. Ray's saying they're on 40th anniversary tour. That makes me feel super old, but I am. I don't really feel old in general, just when things like that come up. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate you. We've got 72 people watching on X. Pretty amazing. Yep. Robbie, thanks so much for everything. It's always fun. So I guess, yeah, we'll be doing these about once a week or so.
Man, I'm thrilled that you're a partner here on Rumble. This is awesome.
It's fun. It's fun. Robbie, have a fantastic weekend. I'm sure we'll be talking over the weekend. And
I'm sure.
Thank you so much. I've got to make sure I don't play the DMZ outro, which I
just do it. No one cares.
I'm just going to go. All right. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Happy communism. Bye.